Hey, it's Field Gates of NFL Live and the Fantasy Focus Football Podcast. With ESPN Daily, you can wake up to the best story you'll hear all day. 20 minutes a day, 5 days a week, where you get an inside look at the most interesting stories at ESPN as told by the top reporters and insiders on the planet. The breaking news of SportsCenter with the deep dive storytelling of 30 for 30. Today's episode was one I thought our listeners would especially enjoy. Please listen and subscribe to ESPN Daily wherever you find your favorite podcasts.
The CBA has passed, and Adam, I see that you are receiving information as we speak, but there has been a majority from that player pool of roughly 2,500 have voted to pass the CBA. What more can you tell us?
Well, Hannah, here's how close the vote was. The yes votes were 1,019, the no votes were 959. So you see the discrepancy right there, a vote difference of about 60. And so the NFL now gets labor peace for the next 10 years.
As uncertainty reigns in sports, one thing is settled. The NFL and its players have a new collective bargaining agreement with an expanded playoff and eventually 17 games coming to a team near you. Today, the union's executive director, Demoris Smith, explains why the deal was so close and what it means. Then, how the coronavirus pandemic could affect the NFL this season. I'm Mina Kimes. It's Monday, March 16th. This is ESPN Daily, presented by ADT. Dee, let's start here. The votes have been tallied. The players voted yes on the new collective bargaining agreement, 1,019 to 959. Why was the vote so close?
Well, I think it sort of speaks for itself. I think the vote is close because you had a group of people who certainly cared about certain issues in the collective bargaining agreement. We made it a really big issue that our players be informed. I think that anytime you have a well-informed group of people and people who weigh things differently, you can certainly expect an outcome that might not be a large majority one way or the other.
What would you say was the biggest win for players in all of this?
In a collective bargaining agreement that instantly raised the salaries of our core by 20%, that benefit or that increase goes into effect a year earlier than it would have. Increases in benefits, HRAs, 401ks, to ensure that the proceeds that are generated from the work our players do is captured and fairly shared. In a country where virtually no large company is certainly creating new pensions and certainly not increasing pensions, we are a large corporation in the United States that not only has secured pensions for another 3-4 generations of players, but also increased the pensions of every former player prior to 2011 and bringing them up to a 2011 standard for their pensions. Those things are huge.
I think, you know, the biggest point of contention amongst critics has obviously been the 17 games. The argument, well, you know, yes, we made advances in terms of revenue share, but perhaps the players could have gotten more concessions in exchange for giving up what was really the biggest lever they had. What do you make of that argument?
In any game, in any political contest, there is always going to be speculation about whether you could have gotten more. And what we have done and what I've always insisted on is at times being brutally honest with our membership about what's on the table, what are the gains, what are the trades.
Well, really, you're talking about leverage, right? I mean, this notion of, or this argument, I suppose, that the league, you guys could have gotten more, comes down to how much leverage your side of the negotiating table had. So let me ask you this. Do you think the union would have lost or gained leverage if this had pushed into next year?
The leverage that we had now was strong, and it's known leverage. We know when the TV contracts expire. We know what the economy was projected to look like, and that was even before the things that have happened in the last 72 hours. I certainly hear people who say, look, you know, Dee, you guys are going to have as much, if not more, leverage next year. Well, the only thing I would say to that is negotiating a deal where if the answer is no, that you find yourself out of work, I would argue that that is less leverage than we have now.
Saturday night, you sent out a letter expressing your thoughts on the deal. You wrote that you believed ratifying it would insulate or best insulate players from economic uncertainty compared to, you know, the billionaire owners who are already insulated from that. Were you referring to, you know, the current state of the world with the coronavirus pandemic causing so much turmoil? And do you think that weighed on players as well?
Do I think that the events of the last 72 hours impacted some of the people's votes? Yes. Do I think that it also resonated because one of the things we certainly teach our players were the lessons of 2006 and 2008 and the lessons from 2016. 2006, the owners entered into a new collective bargaining agreement with the players. It was supposed to last for several years. The owners opted out of that agreement within 2 years. Why? Well, they understood that they were on the verge, if not in the middle of one of the largest economic collapses in our nation's history. And that's why they opted out of the deal. When they opted out of the deal, they were far more insulated against economic downturns than any player. And that was one of the reasons why heading into the 2011 deal, I strongly believed that an opt-out generally inures to the benefit of those who are more financially prepared, more able to take advantage of changes in the economy or changes in the market than perhaps players. You fast forward to 2015, 16, 17, and for the first time in history, there were decreasing numbers of people watching football games. If I was advising the owners during that downturn in viewership, and there was an opt-out available to the owners in a system that paid players 55% of television revenue, I probably would have advised the owners to exercise any opt-out because there were significantly changed circumstances. It's my job to evaluate those facts and to give people their best advice. And we understand the tough choices we have to make. And I understand the tough choices that players have to make.
Dee, we're in an unprecedented time for sports, but as of now, as leagues across the world are canceling things, the NFL calendar has not really changed. The owners' meeting was canceled. Now, obviously, there's quite a bit of time until football begins, but what do you make of the lack of movement on that front?
Well, I can only tell you what we've done. We retained several of the best experts in the world on pandemics, infectious disease, containment, mitigation. We'll be engaging the league on what we think are the best practices and the recommendations in order to not only protect the health and safety of our men, but, you know, as you know, the decisions that we're making affect society at large. And that's a question as a group of Americans who are obligated to think about our neighbors. How do we make the best decisions in our sphere, where we know that those decisions are going to affect people far beyond our own membership?
Thanks, Dee. After the break, NFL insider Dan Graziano will join us to talk about how the new CBA affects the upcoming season and whether all of this could change because of the coronavirus pandemic. Dan, where are you right now?
I'm at home, where I think we've all been told to be as much as possible these days. Good thing is all the work I need to get done can be done from home, so I don't need to be out and about and exposing myself and others to, unnecessary risk. How about you?
I'm doing the same. Dan Graziano covers the NFL for ESPN and has been reporting on potential changes to the offseason. So, Dan, we just talked to Demoris Smith about the vote, which, as you know, was extremely close. And one thing he mentioned was the role that economic uncertainty plays in all of this, especially given what's happening in the world right now with the coronavirus pandemic. I was wondering, based on the conversations you've had around the league, do you think that weighed on players' minds at all?
I think, most of the voting was conducted prior to that huge night where the NBA suspended its season and other leagues started following suit.
The breaking news from the NBA tonight on what will be the final night of the season for a period of time, as play will be suspended.
So they're only a couple days after that. So I think anybody who voted the last couple of days probably did it with this idea in mind. And all along, I know from talking to people at the union and who've been connected with these conversations, all along throughout for the last couple of months, Demoris Smith and Eric Winston, who was the union president, have been trying to tell their guys, hey, an economic downturn is likely coming at some point in the near future. And once that happens, the grounds on which a deal can be done are going to look a lot different than they do now.
Now that the new CBA has been ratified, how will it affect the 2020 season?
Well, a lot of rules will change. The player's share of revenue does not go up until 2021, so it'll still be at 47% this year. But a lot of the new rules will go into effect right away. The higher minimum salaries, minimum salary players get instant raises of $90,000 to $100,000, depending on where they are on the scale. And that'll happen right away. The drug and discipline policies will change right away. No more suspensions, game suspensions for positive marijuana tests, neutral arbitrator for most discipline cases, that kind of thing. And then, we'll see the expanded playoffs this year in 2020. That's in the deal. There'll be a new playoff team in each conference. And then, the benefits, the increases in what former and current players get in terms of benefits will take effect this year right away. So it adds 10 years to what the CBA already was, but it's effectively an 11-year deal because a lot of parts of it go into effect right away this year in 2020, which would have been, as you know, the final year of the previous deal.
It feels a little strange to be talking about the upcoming season or really anything that's a ways out right now. But Dan, as of now, the league year has not been pushed back, which means free agency is going to begin as scheduled on March 18th with the legal tampering period even before that. What did you hear from team officials and agents on that front?
For over the weekend, it seemed like a lot of them were convinced it would be pushed back, but I think most of that was speculation and just thinking that it would have to be. After the CBA voting got done on Saturday, and after the results were announced, the league and the union got together, because the league can't just, they would have to negotiate that with the union or agree with the union on, well, if they're going to push free agency back. So they talked during the day Sunday. And what I'm getting from people who are, familiar with the content of those talks is, the thinking is, this is the free agency in the NFL is not an event that requires a whole bunch of people to assemble together, which is the main reason that games have been canceled in other leagues. They don't want people assembling in the same place in large numbers. The deals can be done without players visiting team facilities, and in fact are all the time, even in normal years. And then the other thought was, we don't know what's going to happen. There are medical experts out there telling you that in 2 weeks, 3 weeks, things could be a lot worse than they are right now. And if you postpone free agency by 2 or 3 weeks, and now the situation in the country has gotten even more significant in terms of, what's happening, people not being able to leave their homes, businesses shutting down, et cetera, then what do you do? Do you postpone it again? By the end of the day Sunday, it seemed like they were ready to get going with this thing on schedule. And I think that's the result of some conversations between the union and the league on Sunday.
Well, also on Sunday, you had some early deal making, a big multi-year contract for Titans quarterback Ryan Tannehill, a big trade with Calais Campbell from the Jaguars going to the Ravens. Do you think teams were waiting for the new CBA to be passed so they'd have a better sense of where everything stands?
Yes, and not just a better sense, but just having to understand the rules. If the CBA had failed, then 2020 would have been the final league year of the previous CBA, and there are special rules. We've heard a lot about how teams would have been able to use the franchise and transition tags instead of having to pick one or the other. But there's another rule called the 30% rule, where you're not allowed to get a raise of more than 30% of your 2020 salary in any future year. And if you look at the breakdown of the Tannehill deal, as has been reported by our man Jeff Darlington, it would have been illegal had the CBA not been ratified, because his 2021 salary is more than 30% higher than his 2020 salary. So teams were waiting to do these deals because they had to know how they were able to structure them.
So as you mentioned, free agency, the signings can all be conducted remotely. That's not an event, but the NFL draft is an event, and the Center for Disease Control just recommended that Americans cancel or postpone gatherings of 50 or more people for the next 2 months. Do you think that means that the draft and some of the events that happen right after it, like rookie mini camps, are off the table?
Oh, yeah. And even events that'll happen before it. I mean, when you look at teams with new head coaches are allowed to start their offseason programs April 6th, and teams that don't have new head coaches are allowed to start April 20th. So you're talking about 3 weeks from now, 5 weeks from now, and they're talking about avoiding gatherings of 50 or more for 8 weeks. Obviously, when teams show up for their offseason programs, there's more than 50 guys there. So, you know, do the math. It doesn't sound like they'll be able to do that. Obviously, they're not going to be able to put hundreds of thousands of people on the Las Vegas Strip together and have the draft the way they've had it the last couple of years. They'll have a draft, they'll pick players, et cetera, but it won't be that kind of show. But I think what you'll see now is, you know, what does the NFL do about its offseason program? If they have to delay the start of the offseason programs, what does that mean in terms of how they operate? There are very specific rules about the offseason program in the newly approved CBA. Well, when they can be there, when they can't, what kind of stuff they can and can't do. So they're going to have to be some significant changes to that, because obviously it doesn't look like they're going to want to be getting teams together for what they would normally be doing in April and May until we see what's on the other side of all this.
Dan, the NFL has been relatively fortunate compared to the other leagues in that their season does not start until September, with preseason in August. That said, there's so much uncertainty around all of this right now. Do you think there's any chance, or have you heard any talk about the possibility of actually pushing back the regular season?
I have not, but, you know, as we're talking, news is coming in, right? You mentioned the CDC recommending no gatherings of 50 or more for 8 weeks, and I'm just talking about how that's going to affect the NFL's off-season program. It's not crazy to imagine a situation where the league says, oh, nobody could start their off-season programs until late May, early June. We may have to delay the start of the season just so people can have the kind of off-season program they need to have. That's not an impossible scenario to imagine. Now, 9 years ago, when there was a lockout and they finally did the new CBA, there was a truncated off-season program and training camp, and they were able to start the season, you know, and have the season as normal. But so there is some precedent for it, depending on how long it gets pushed back. Hopefully, we're not still looking in September at the circumstances we're looking at now, but the circumstances we're in now could push everything back on the calendar to a point where the league may end up having a decision to make about when they can get going in September.
Thanks so much, Dan.
Of course.
Coming up, Coach O wants you to think about public health. Here's another story I want you to know. Amidst all of the breaking news around the pandemic over the last few days, sports, or the lack of sports, have felt secondary in terms of their significance, and rightfully so. But sports have also been central to our understanding of the crisis. When Utah Jazz player Rudy Gobert tested positive for coronavirus last week, the news affirmed for many the severity of the situation. And now you've got athletes like Steph Curry speaking out about the importance of hand washing, self-monitoring, and social distancing, basically saying, listen to the experts when they tell us what it will take to flatten the curve of the virus's growth in America. In Louisiana, the governor, John Bel Edwards, asked LSU coach Ed Orgeron to spread the word.
For every winning team, a key to success is learning the playbook. That's true in football, and it's also true as we take on the coronavirus. The spread of the coronavirus is a serious matter, but there's a game plan for keeping residents as safe as possible. Everyone has a role to play as we face this challenge together.
That message, which has nearly 3 million views on Twitter, was published on Saturday afternoon. On Saturday night, video spread of New Orleans police trying to clear out Bourbon Street, where hundreds or perhaps more people were defying the recommendations of those experts and crowding public places, jeopardizing others' health. I say others because, as has been pointed out repeatedly, you don't have to be old or sick to catch the virus and endanger others. Indeed, the Detroit Pistons player who tested positive after playing Gobert, Christian Wood, showed no symptoms. His story, his experience matters. Coach O's words matter. And while sports may not feel like they matter very much right now, it's evident that there are people in and around these games who can make a real difference. I'm Mina Kimes, and this has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.